Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Tuesday's Table Talk. We're so glad to be with you. Thank you for joining us. And this week at Table Talk, Daniel Pulliam is with us. Welcome. Welcome to the table.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Daniel, you've been in our fellowship at River Oaks, not for a long time, but it's been a real privilege to get to know you and your heart for God's word and leading a small group now.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yes, sir. So thank you for doing that. And I know your group is really blessed by that, but we'll look forward to the conversation. David?
Good to be back.
Yeah.
Good
welcome back. Thank you for the message on Sunday.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're in Luke 16.
Right.
And this is part 9 of the third section of our study on certainty. We only have one more week to go.
Wow.
As Jesus has continued to ramp up or ratchet up the intensity of his message. Mm-hmm. And today we have one we call money management. But it's much more than that, and it's probably as challenging, at least by feedback from some of you guys online. And so we're going to get right into it. We're going to just go ahead and read some passages and talk about it, and we look forward to growing alongside with you here at Table Talk. So, Daniel, would you read Luke 16, verses 1 through 7?
Yes, sir.
That would be great.
Now he said to the disciples, there was a rich man who received an accusation that his manager was squandering his possessions. So he called the manager in and asked, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you can no longer be my manager. Mm-hmm. Then the manager said to himself, what will I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I'm removed from management, people will welcome me into their homes. So he summoned each one of his master's debtors. How much do you owe my master? He asked the first one. 100 measures of olive oil, he said. Take your invoice, he told him. Sit down quickly and write 50. Next, he asked another. How much do you owe? 100 measures of wheat, he said. Take your invoice, he told him, and write 80.
Okay, I know we're not through this passage all the way yet, but I wanted us to stop before we got to the really challenging part. Just in what we've read so far, what do we make of it that we might not understand today, David? What's going on here? How would you explain that?
Well, perhaps the role of the manager, okay. Household manager, steward, sometimes okay. called, master's the owner. The steward has responsibility for managing the master's affairs.
Okay.
And collecting the debts from these debtors.
Okay.
And the guy's been accused of wasting his goods. He's called him to account. He knows he's going to lose his job, so he's negotiating with the debtors to reduce their debts and endear himself to them.
Okay.
Put him in their favor.
Okay.
Put himself in favor with them.
Why would he be doing that? Why do you think, Daniel, that he would go to these lengths? I mean, once you're fired, why don't he just out the door? I mean, what's the...
I think there's life after being fired, so he was making sure he padded his retirement right. or pension.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, remember me. He was looking toward his future circumstance.
Right.
Like, okay, right. I'm had here, but what can I do to make my next season more comfortable or available to me, right? Sort of looking right. forward to that. Now let's look at this next few verses, because this is where it really gets confusing sometimes, I think for all of us, the first time through. So, David, would you read verses 8 and 9? Because what's our expectation here? What do we expect the household master to now say about the manager?
Well, condemn him.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, condemn yes.
him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
What would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not be pleased.
Okay. Yeah. Come on, guys. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Go fix right? it. Like, I would go recall.
He just stole from you, mm-hmm. right? On his way out. Surely yeah. Jesus is going to say, don't ever be like this man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see what he says. Verses 8 and 9.
Verse 8, the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. Commended for his shrewdness.
Commended for his shrewdness. So, again, we're going to get into some listener questions and some of the conversations we've had. But commended really shrewdness, but it's almost like he's commending his dishonesty. Is that the way to go?
I don't think he's commending his dishonesty.
Okay.
Commending his foresight, his planning ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I So in the small group, there was an example that was given, a life example, if I may share it.
Please.
Someone had talked about when they worked at a food place in the mall, like in the food court, that all the high schoolers that would work there, they would share food among other businesses, or they would know that if I gave you a slice of pizza or some tacos, you worked at the theater, so you would give me free tickets to the theater. And so the idea of understanding from their perspective, they didn't have the money, right, to purchase these things, so they were using their master's wealth in order to pad them, to allow them to do things they needed to do on the weekend. Okay. So I think that shrewdness and the same dishonesty,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily trying to commend the dishonesty, but the idea of thinking ahead, this is what I need to get, and I'm going to use my resources at hand in order to obtain that thing for the future.
Oh, good example.
Looking at that future right, yeah. Circumstance. So one of the confusions, I think, when we try to understand this parable, and we'll get to the heart of it here in a moment, but I think there's some confusion on the word shrewd. I was in conversations with several who seem to almost associate shrewdness with dishonesty. But that's not really the definition of shrewdness. What comes to mind? I mean, what is the definition, do you guys, would we say, of being shrewd?
Wisdom or discernment, the idea of acting in a way that's going to help me to get my end result.
Okay.
And that sort of wisdom.
David?
Skillful, prudent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it can be a very positive trait, astute, even to the idea of intelligent, right? That's foresight, that's looking toward, that future circumstance. So I think the first thing we have to do is sort of make sure that we're clear on the words and what's going on here. So he was commended for his shrewdness, but not his dishonesty. So how then does that sort of complete what Jesus is saying? We should be shrewd as followers of Jesus. We should be shrewd as well. Is that the?
Well, yeah. let me. So how it tied in with the illustration for my group? Because for me, it actually helped click too.
Okay.
When the shrewdness as stewards, so. Everything that I would have, I'm trying not to jump ahead of any questions.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Yeah.
Call me out if I am. Everything that we have flows through us, so we don't own it. So the same way he was shrewd in taking his master's resources in order to pad his future, we should take the resources that don't really belong to us, right, and still invest them, and not necessarily to pad our future.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about so that friends will receive you in eternity, right? So for the kingdom of God, we're still using resources that belong to our master in order for an end goal. Just like, although there's no dishonesty,
right?
We want to use it that way.
In eternal perspective.
Right.
In how we use our resources, I would say even how we interact with others, how we build our relationships.
Right.
Really everything about how we live this life has some sort of thought or foresight.
Mm-hmm.
With an eternal perspective, right? An eternal lens. So there is that. David, would you add anything to the lesson of that?
Well, he adds the words following Christ, what Christ says about the shrewdness. He says, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. So he's contrasting how, look at the unbelievers. They're pretty shrewd what they're doing in the world, more so than the sons of the kingdom. So take what's transferable, the astuteness in using this wealth, and use your wealth with an eternal perspective, thinking about your eternal dwelling.
I hear him to a degree. You know, to me, what it speaks to me is that, look, is ironic, right? Those who follow the world, bad motivations, but they end up with good results.
Right.
As followers of mine, as sons of light, it should be good motivation and end up with good results.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's not like you say, what's transferable is the thought of and the actions that are honorable and motivations are good with that eternal perspective.
Right.
But it is confusing. So one of the questions that came out of it, I want to read here from Alan, who said, you know, the children of the world are wiser than the children of light. Should learn from them. In 16:9, it says, we use our money to make friends. N.T. Wright, in his Luke for Everyone, says the church needs to reassess what matters and what doesn't. We should learn to think unconventionally and throw caution to the winds. So those were all in quotes from N.T. Wright's book. Is Jesus suggesting that the church should adapt to worldly thoughts and ways and uses of money to make friends and get away from the pure intent of Scripture so that the decline in mainline churches will stop? Now, that was a long way around, I think, that was being asked here by Alan. Is it, what we take out of this is not, again, sort of the cunning, sly, fox shrewdness that, what's the word, what's a phrase we would use, like, it really doesn't. The methods don't matter. The means don't matter, right? Or the methods. Okay. It's just
it's the message.
Yeah, it's the end result. Whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes, just do it. That's not what we're saying here. That's not what Jesus is saying. Would we say?
He's saying the guy used his master's money to prepare for his own future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Use what God has given you with an eternal perspective.
Yes.
Because there's life after this life.
Yes, and the use of money. I loved how you said this yesterday, David, was that it says, you know, the unrighteous wealth is because of the way wealth is used in this world, but you will make friends when wealth is of zero value.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that's why it's sort of seen as this unrighteous wealth is because there is no eternal value to the wealth. So use it now to build those kingdom treasures.
And you can lay up treasure in heaven.
Yeah.
That's what he said in Matthew chapter 6.
Yeah. So parables, I like to say there's much we can see in parables. Jesus usually did them with a very simple spiritual truth. Mm-hmm. And then often, if we're not careful, there's much we read into the parables that just aren't there.
Right, right.
And knowing first century context, but also knowing that, look, there's not much, be careful of trying to extend the interpretation of it. Anything else on that, Daniel, that you would add?
Caution to the wind. So I appreciate N.T. Wright's book. The way I would interpret it is let me think about the caution. A lot of times, so with money resources, I still would tend to view them as my own, right? So I'm still somewhat cautious where, maybe I need to send money to a missionary who's here and available right now and they have a need. Well, I might always think, I have to pay these bills. I have to do this thing. So there's always some caution. So I would take N.T. Wright's words or encouragement to throw caution to the wind to be truly see it as this manager saw it. It's not mine. So if I cut your bill in half or if I cut your bill down 80%, it doesn't matter because it's not mine. Right. As long as I start seeing that, I'm going to be more free with my resources.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it's just more open and not always rigid, but there should be some discernment and caution as well. I mean, it's also a message on stewardship.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Jesus, he puts this almost like a wordplay balance when he talks about unrighteous money.
Yeah.
And then he makes a contradistinction and calls the other genuine riches. Mm. So there's this definite of what you see and you're using, it's kind of fake in the whole sense of things. There's something that's true and genuine. And so when you see that, then you're, what did Bonhoeffer say, money is dirt, right? So then you start seeing resources in that way, and you don't hang on to them.
That's right. Yeah, good point. That's a great word, Daniel. Thank you. And so as we look for ways to be more like Jesus would have us be, eternal perspective, are there some other practical things, David, you would suggest someone?
I just think, I like to look at this passage in the light of some other passages on dealing with wealth, like what Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Sometimes when I look at a teaching of Jesus so convicting, I think, wow, do we just have to give away 100% of our money? But Paul says in that chapter, first of all, God's given us richly all things to enjoy. And he says, charge those who are rich in the world not to put their hope in uncertain wealth, but put their hope in God who gives us richly all things to enjoy, that they're to do good, that they're to be generous and ready to share. So it would be a mistake, I think, to take this chapter as an absolute condemnation of anyone who's rich. Let's face
it. Yeah.
We're rich compared to most of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, if we drove a car here, we've got more than one set of clothes and plenty of food at home. But I would get back to what Jesus says, no one can serve two masters.
Right.
Either he'll hate one, love the other, be devoted to the one, despise the other. it's a constant battle the more you have to make sure that he's on the throne of our hearts and not our wealth. I find it challenging. I find it challenging, and I expect many of us do.
Well, and while you mention what Jesus says about that, let me go ahead and finish these last few verses here, verses 10 through 13, where Jesus would say, "So one who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth," which we've spoken to, "who will entrust you to the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." That seems to be the bottom line here in this first parable as well, is really, who are you serving?
Like,
you know, it's
and
you used it yesterday. You said, because God does not allow us idol worship that is above him.
Right.
And that's really what we're doing if we worship money, or money's our master above God. It's hard not to, right, in this world to try to, I think we each have to reflect what those two or three or four masters are in our own life and assure that God is on the throne of those, right? And can we open up our fingers and our hearts to these other things in our life, and make sure that we are not serving or attempting to, because it's impossible. It's impossible. Last comment, just reflecting on, we don't have time to read through it, but I really hope our groups were able to spend some time with the rich man and Lazarus and everything that's going on there. I love this passage. The more and more I look at it, and just as we sort of speak to it, this is verses 19 on through
31.
31. Thank you, David. My glasses down there in time. 19:31, and the idea of Lazarus, not that Lazarus,
not the one raised from the dead.
Right. So not that Lazarus is begging on the streets at a rich man's table. We don't know the name of the rich man. And their circumstances change. The upside-down kingdom, the radical reversal of God's economy, and all of a sudden the rich man is now begging from the pits of Hades, and Lazarus is looking down at, from the feast of heaven, so to speak, at Abraham's bosom, his side. That Abraham, but basically just technically looking to mean a heaven or a special place in heaven. What do we make of that? Like, what would be our theological, you know, explanation of what's the intent here?
So a couple of things that I was thinking, since it follows on the idea of condemning the Pharisees in the section above. So this rich man, of course, is different than the other rich man. The other rich man in the first parable sort of like stated to be in existence and then moved on. This rich man is the negative example. And so, one, Lazarus, when he does open his eyes in Hades, he calls Lazarus by name, so he knew Lazarus was in front of his gate. He knew Lazarus's name. And yet, every day, for however long he laid there, he closed his ears to the cry of the poor. All right, so the outworking of serving money was definitely displayed in this guy's life.
Good word.
So, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. David, any...
No, I would just echo that. I mean, it was obvious disregard of, you know, this guy's feasting sumptuously every day and disregarding this guy right at his gate. I mean, it's just...
And isn't that just really a picture of the last shall be first, or the least shall be great and the great shall be least? And some will say, too, that, you know, there's close to 40 parables, depends on which ones you say or twice or once or whatever. But in 40 parables, Lazarus is the only named character of any parable. And you know, there's various thoughts about why that is, but it seems to be that it goes along with this least to great as well. That, you know, isn't it ironic at the end of the day, the one who thought he had everything didn't even have a name, and the one you thought had nothing is named by Jesus and known by God, and actually sits aside Abraham in heaven. It can't get more upside down than that.
Right.
And so I just think this parable is a beautiful picture of that. In fact, it's one of the most iconic relative to artwork and illustrations throughout history because of the panels that work itself around from, you know, this is the circumstance here. This is what happens in the middle. Let's flip the circumstances down here. And so there's some really beautiful depictions of that, too, that are taking place. But Abraham. All right. Hey, final sprint. Why would you encourage anyone to read from chapter 16? What might be on your heart if you were to say, hey, you should really look at 16? There's something in there for you.
For me, it's about perspective. Jesus draws a clear distinction between, it speaks to me a reminder that the things that I hold, touch, have, and tend to draw me aren't real. They're tools. And here's what happens when my life gets out of balance. This is what it would look like. So make sure. I heard the always, you know, I would hear being raised in church of you can't have two masters. You can't serve God and money. But where Jesus starts to talk, it really hit me about what is genuine and what will fail and what is true and what is meant for you and what is in others. So there's definitely beyond this life or firing, right? There's something more.
Good word. Thank you, Daniel. David, any word you'd encourage someone to?
I'd say money is a good servant, but a poor master. Use it with eternal perspective.
That's right. And I would just say that I'm encouraged by the idea that the first parable starts with the idea of money into the rich, and the last parable is the same sort of aspect. And right in the middle, Luke records that that the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, and so it was made very consistent throughout this whole passage that we need to reflect on it ourselves. It's important to God how we manage His resources.
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. David. Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Great to have you.
Have you back to the table here next season for sure. So thank you so much for joining us.
Really
enjoy that. And for those of you, next week is the final episode of Table Talk this season. We look forward to getting back with you as we look at another passage, Luke 17 this time, on temptations, faithfulness, and gratitude. Until then, blessings, friends.
Thank you.